This is Shirley Goldblum for Pittsburgh chapter of National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Part 2. We are in the home of our respondent, Fanny Hart Schwartz, at 151 North Craig Street. And Fanny is with us today to give us some of her historical background. Fanny, for the machine, so that we know we're recording properly, can you state your name and your birth date?
Fanny Hart Schwartz, February 12, 1904.
Thank you very much. Well, Fanny, the only thing we left out of our intro is today's date for our interview, so we'll put that in for the record right now. Today's date is March the 6th of 1982, and I'm simply delighted to be here in your lovely living room with you. We'd like to get on, perhaps, with your in your oral history, with your immediate family, meaning your family of origin, your father, mother, sisters, brothers, whatever you want to talk about. It can include uncles and aunts, but perhaps we would like to start with the place of birth.
Chicago, Illinois.
Chicago, Illinois. And we know that it was February 12, 1904. Would you like to start with any knowledge of your father, perhaps?
Well, my father was 30 years older than I. He was a fun person. He was born in Chicago also in 1874, one of six children to my German-born grandparents, my Hart grandparents.
Your father's name was Hart? No, your mother's.
Mine, and my father's.
Oh, excuse me, that's right. And he was born in Chicago of German parentage.
Mm-hmm.
What did your father do then?
Well, as far back as I can remember, my father was in the retail business, first in the shoe business and later in the, what we used to call men's furnishings.
How nice. And your mother?
I'm laughing because a friend of mine said she thought my mother was the original women's liberal, and she knew her, as you might suspect. And I corrected her by saying that she only thought my mother was the first woman's liver because she didn't know my grandmother.
Because she was really the woman's liver. Well, tell us a little bit about that, Dan.
Well, she was my maternal grandmother. She was born in England. She came here with a brother and her parents when she was 3 years old. She went to a convent in Cincinnati. I believe at that time there was not free education in Ohio, and her parents were education-minded, so they sent their little girl to a convent. I don't know.
Wasn't it strange for that time to do that?
I told you she was the woman's, the original woman.
Oh,
and probably her mother was before her.
That's great.
She lived until the year I was married, and I owe her a lot because even though I was an only child, my mother used to send me for days at a time to stay with her parents. My grandfather had been an amputee and was not as well all his life as he might have been, although he worked. And I used to go and be his little nurse at 3 and 4 years of age in an apron and cap that my grandmother made me.
You must have been adorable.
And she taught me a lot of things while she was playing with me. She used to get out the dried beans and the rice, which was bought in bulk in those days. She taught me to weigh and measure and wrap and make change while we played store together. She was a great person, as I say. I learned a great deal by being with those grandparents.
Those must have been pleasant hours.
Yes. My Hart grandparents I never knew. My grandfather died when I was two, and my grandmother died before my parents even knew each other.
Hmm.
My mother was one of six children also, all born in Chicago.
So your mother was the original woman's liver except for your grandma.
Right.
And she was one of six sibs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sibs. Tell me what life was like as a little girl in Chicago. Give us a little bit of that background. How did it feel?
I wish I could remember.
Schooling.
Yes. Well, I went to school. I went to grade school. I went to the Phil Sheridan School in Chicago when I was little. And when I was in seventh grade, we moved to Cicero, Illinois, which is a contiguous suburb.
I thought it was a small town.
And I graduated there from the local high school.
You moved to Cincinnati when you were seven.
I never said anything about Cincinnati.
Oh, excuse me.
Cicero.
Oh, Cicero.
Illinois.
Cicero. And you graduated from there.
Yes, what we now call a consolidated high school.
What's a consolidated high school?
It was two communities that had one high school together.
Like they're doing now.
Yeah, like they're doing now. And
and what was life like then?
Well, I'll tell you something about what life was like then. The more I look back on those years, the more I wish that education had continued along those same lines. The high school I went to was the number one high school in the state of Illinois.
Mm. Mm.
It was really an outstanding school, and the reason it was outstanding was partly, or mostly perhaps, because of the principal and the school board. For example, may I take a few minutes to tell you why
sure.
I think it's so wonderful? For example, we hear children now, at least we used to, I don't anymore have much contact with children anymore. We hear children speak of their home rooms.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to high school, a home was a place where you reported your attendance and you had a 10-minute spelling lesson. Then you went to your class. The same 10 minutes that were spent in the were devoted to spelling, at which we had to turn in a written paper with the two words that had been assigned before, the day before. That was one of the things that was very outstanding about that high school. The second thing I have to tell you about that high school is my cousin graduated. She didn't graduate from that high school, but she lived in Cicero at the time she graduated from the City of Chicago High School. She had moved and she finished her senior year there. By that time, the school board at my high school had started a free junior college.
Was this in
Cicero? And as I say, I regret that that line of thinking in education hasn't been mm-hmm. pursued, because it was a marvelous setup.
Indeed.
It was a junior college, a two-year junior college like we have now. And my cousin went to that for 2 years and was entered as a junior then at Northwestern University, so her background was excellent. Mm-hmm. And I think of it often, because as we get older, we compare the present to the past maybe a little too much, but...
Well, they were ahead of their time.
I was going to say, that school board was really ahead of its time.
That sounds great.
I don't know how long that lasted, but long enough for my cousin to finish her work. Then she went to teach at the same high school, not in the college, but in the high school.
She taught then in the city of Chicago High School.
No, it was not a city of Chicago High School. She did later, but she wasn't then. She taught first
in
at
Cicero.
Cicero.
Mm-hmm.
As a Jay Sterling Martin mm-hmm. High School.
Huh. She taught in Cicero then.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, Fan, did you go to that school, the junior college? I mean,
that wasn't established until after I was graduated.
I see. That was established after.
Mm-hmm.
So then, now that we're talking about your life in school, let's just kind of continue with that. Did you matriculate after you went to...
I graduated at 16 from high school. I'd only been to high school 3 years. I graduated at 16. I went 2 years to the University of Illinois, and I took my undergraduate degree at the University of Chicago in 1924.
University of Illinois, and then Chicago. Graduated 24. Well, you've been on the academic scene for a long time then.
All my life.
What did you study when you were in school? What was your major program of study?
Well, I took my degree in philosophy. And somebody said to me once, "And what did that do for you?" And somebody answered before I did, and they said it made you a philosopher.
Well, you're indeed that. I know you as quite a philosopher.
this woman said to me, "What did it do for me?" I said, "Well, it taught me to think, I can tell you that." And then I said, "But I think all college educations are supposed to do that."
Do they always?
No.
No, they look for a living.
My experience is not that they do all the time.
Let's get back to your family of origin and elaborate a little bit, if we might, on that. You say your father, at the time of your birth, was 30 years old, and that your mother, he was German-born and in the retail
business.
No,
I didn't say that. He was born in Chicago.
He was born of German parentage,
yes.
And that your mother was one of the original women's libbers, and I take it you were an only child then?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And is that why you spent so much time with your grandparents?
Possibly. Although, when people say to me, "Didn't you miss brothers and sisters?" I always say, "What are brothers and sisters?" My parents and I were the three musketeers. Whatever they did, I did.
That's great. What did they do? What kind of a life was it?
Well, my mother was exceptionally bright. As a matter of fact, may I throw in a little anecdote here?
Oh, yeah.
When I was graduated from college, and my mother wanted me to go to law school, and I didn't want to go. I'd been fed up with going to school by that time, as a lot of young people are. And I didn't want to go to law school. But I used to accuse her of wanting me to go to law school so she could read the books.
Mm-hmm.
She had the mind for it, but she didn't have the foundation education to study law. And she was a great loss to the law profession. She would have been excellent.
That's
where Richard got his. Yes. She was very bright, very community-minded. As a matter of fact, she and two other women, when I was a young girl, started a well baby clinic in the town where we lived.
What was that?
Well, people were invited to bring their babies in regularly for inspections, for examinations by doctors to make sure that they were well and healthy. Didn't you used to take your babies to doctors when they were little?
Sure.
Absolutely, but you know what? In a community as old as the one you're describing, they didn't set up clinics specifically.
That's why I'm mentioning these three women.
I think that is admirable beyond belief, because absolutely a community service like that is.
That's why I'm mentioning it. As a matter of fact, my grandmother, the one that I told you I learned so much from, was one of the originators of the Ladies' Aid Society in the synagogue they used to belong to. So they were all organizers from way back.
Well, then, obviously, in your background, there was a great deal of tradition toward organization and community.
As a matter of fact, this would be a good place to tell you something else that I think was interesting. I used to be on the Immigration and Naturalization Committee for Council.
Yeah.
And I was very sentimental about it, because it was the first job my mother ever had in council.
You were what? Tell us that again. You were what?
In the Immigration and Naturalization Committee.
Ooh,
that's out of existence now. We don't need that anymore.
Well, tell us a little bit about what that was.
Well, we used to maintain English-speaking classes for immigrants. We used to help people with their naturalization examinations. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm so sure about that discussion we had about the change in the immigration law, in the naturalization law in 1922, because that particular year, we had a citywide naturalization services at the Soldiers and Sailors Memorial Hall, to which I went. And I met a woman there whom I knew and whom I thought had been American born. And I said to her afterwards, "Lillian, what are you doing here today?" And she said, "I married my husband before 1922, and I lost my American citizenship ticket at citizenship, and I'm just getting around to getting it back."
Well, now that describes the business that we discussed about the naturalization.
Yes, that's why I'm so positive, because I had that example.
I wasn't sure.
Well, you know, Fan, obviously your background is replete with a great deal of community effort and community work, and I know that presently you're doing a lot of community service.
Not much anymore.
We would
just
like
a little.
To. We'll get to the community service that you're doing right now at a little bit later time, if you don't mind. But you know, you mentioned something about doing a lot of joint activity at home, and you had many, many projects. You suggested an uncle that used to come over and play around with you and do.
You want to turn that off for a minute till I get you something I'm going to show you? Or do you want to wait till later?
Yes, get it later for
all
us,
right,
if you will. But
because it bears on what you're asking.
All
me.
Right. The subject that we're discussing is we talked about before. We talked about your uncle who used to come over and do these projects. Tell us a little about that. Elaborate, if you will. I think it's just beautiful.
Well, as I recall.
What was your uncle's name?
Harry Pitsley.
Uncle Harry Pitsley.
P-I-T-Z-E-L-E. That was my mother's maiden name, and it's a world-only name.
P-I-T. What does that mean?
Everybody in the world with that name is related.
Really? That's great. So what did you do with Uncle Harry Pitsley?
Everything. He was my friend, my companion, my babysitter, and we had a special thing going always. He lived with us for a while. I don't remember how long, but when I was little.
This was your mother's brother.
Mm-hmm. He used to write my letters to Santa Claus and drink the milk and cookies that I left for Santa Claus.
Oh, that's great. You told me about I remember you mentioned that you told me about a project that you did about cutting out and putting together.
That's what I want to show you.
Okay, okay, good enough. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it was in the days when we used to buy in the candy stores, as we called them, something called transfers, whereby you would wet these pictures and turn them upside down and imprint them on paper. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a series of those transfers that were based on what we used to call Koopy dolls. And each of these transfers had cubies in a different setting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my family made a project of that. My mother transferred the pictures. My father did the printing, and my uncle wrote the jingles.
Oh.
And that's what I want to show you. That's one of the few things I have left from my.
Do you want to get it and show it to us?
I want to show it to
you. All right, good. Do it.
Put it on for you.
See, each of these pictures is different, and they were all transferred onto these pages of spelling paper that came from school.
Oh, my.
Each one of the transfers is different.
Uh-huh.
It's my father's printing, and my uncle wrote all the jingles.
Oh, aren't they adorable?
And, of course, the jingle has to do with what the koopy is doing in the picture.
Read us a jingle, fans. We'd like to hear one.
Well, this one says, this one little koopy so dear wants a home with nothing to fear. And the second one says, I too said this dolly so sad want a home in which to be glad. And here's a picture of three koopies, and two of them are painting the body of the third one. And it says, these koopies started out to paint the town and soon became painters of great renown.
Very funny.
These two little koopies, separate and different, one says, I want the mama and I want the dad, and who will always love me and not for a fad. Yours for the taking, this big baby boy, to carry your banner will be a great joy.
What a wonderful uncle. He sounds really like a talented fellow.
Now here's a picture of three different little koopies, and it says, three little koopies all in a row are out to get you, so don't go so slow. And this one says, this one has a picture of a koopy with a soldier hat and a toy gun and says, my country needs the boy in blue who as a soldier will be true, etc. for six pages.
Did your grandchildren appreciate these?
I think they've only seen it once.
Mm-hmm. But obviously it's something you should keep.
Oh, yes. It's about the only thing I have.
It's an absolutely delightful thing. Tell us, Pam, now that we're talking about some of the lovely things in your life as a child, discuss your religious background. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, have to laugh at my religious background. My mother came from a very Orthodox family. My father's family were heathens. What do you mean by that? And I should be a very mixed up character.
You don't look too mixed up to me.
Well, anyway, as I say, my mother's family were very religious and Orthodox, and we spent all the religious holidays with them. My father's parents were heathen, and we spent all the secular holidays with them, and it worked out beautifully. And I'll tell you a little story that sums the whole thing up very well. When my mother and father were engaged, my grandmother, of course, was already dead, and I had one aunt who was the family head, and she invited my mother to dinner. Well, when my mother came home, my grandmother was asking her question, and she said, "And what did you have to eat?" or something equivalent to that. And my mother says, "Oh, I only ate the cranberry sauce." Very self-righteous. And my grandmother said to her, when you're in Rome, you do as the Romans do. And that was the end of that.
Your mother learned. Good lesson. Good lesson.
Now you know my grandmother.
Yes, she was the original woman's liver, indeed. So that
a free spirit.
Indeed. So did your mother then really carry out the tradition, the Jewish
my
tradition
mother kept,
in your...
My mother kept a kosher house for many years, but later we didn't. But she continued to eat, not pork things, but she continued to eat treif all her life in my aunt's homes and out in restaurants as well.
Very good. Well, then she was a liberated woman in every respect, mm-hmm. traditionally, mm-hmm. religiously, and so forth. Economically, would you say that yours was a comfortable background as a child? Was it easy? Was life easy at that time?
Well, it was easy according to our times. I think my father never was, we never had help in the store. We had weekly help at home. I mean, we were not affluent. My mother and I took a couple very great trips on the dimes that she used to save on the salt box.
Not affluent, but comfortable.
I went to college. There never was any question about that. I went there as easily as though it was the 13th grade. It was just, there was just no break at all. It was just a foregone conclusion that I would go.
Did you enjoy college? Were those wonderful years for you? What about that experience?
Yes, I think they were wonderful years for me. In the first year that I went away, I stayed at the women's dormitory at the University of Illinois, and it was a very, very nice experience. It was a good experience. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite lifetime stories came from that year. We had a house mother who had been educated in France. An American woman, but educated in France. And we lived in a brand new residence hall. Couldn't think of the word.
Mm-hmm.
So that if there were faculty parties or anything special, they used to be given at our house because it was the nicest and the newest one around. And Miss Blaisdell, which was the name of our house mother, used to refer to a tea as a gibble, gobble, and get.
Ooh.
You eat, you talk, and you go home.
She's a character. She was a character. Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my favorite stories from that period of my life.
What is your background as far as the sorority is concerned?
During the end of that freshman year, I met some girls in the hall and other places who were engaged in forming a second Jewish sorority on the campus.
There was one already.
What was the second one that you formed?
Well, we called her Rho Beta Iota. After I left the university, it became the Theta chapter of Phi Sigma Sigma.
But you called it Rho Beta what?
Iota.
Uh-huh. And it became Phi Sig.
Yes. Uh-huh. It became Theta chapter of Phi Sigma Sigma. Now, the second year, we took a house together.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents helped us with money and endorsements, and we had a pretty stormy year.
Did it become national while you were still on campus? Was that
no,
the year?
Afterwards.
I see.
And that's why I did not go into the sorority. I was made a national honorary member of the sorority after I was married, after I was married and lived here, because my college roommate was in the Archon, the Grand Archon. Rose Janowitz.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Now we come to, now that you have discussed your college years and told us about your sorority leanings, and actually, Fan, I think that you show us that you're quite a celebrity in that particular area. I don't think I've ever interviewed a celebrity who has started a sorority.
Well, I was going to, I was only one of the originators, and I was one of the biggest agitators, and I really think it was partly responsible for my having left Illinois, because I was not happy. And I was too young and inexperienced to know how to work my way out of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I left.
Discipline wasn't part of
no,
your
no.
make up yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you learn that as you go along.
Maturity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fan, let's get to your marriage. We've discussed your background from a standpoint of your early years, your childhood, your schooling. And your college and your wonderful years in sorority work. What about your marriage? When did you meet your husband? Who was your husband?
Well,
let's start with that. Who was your husband?
My husband was Alan I. Schwartz. He was born in Homestead, PA, and was in business in Elizabeth, PA, when I met and married him. And I met him on a trip to Pittsburgh. Beginning with the second quarter of my first year at Chicago, I went to a room with a girl who was commuting from Gary, Indiana, and she was a transfer also from Indiana University, and we became friends during that first quarter, and in the winter quarter, we went to live together. I lived on the campus the first quarter, but she commuted, and of course, it got too difficult for that. We graduated in 1924. She was born in Pittsburgh and moved to Gary, I don't remember when. But that year, 1924, they moved back to Pittsburgh. And in 1926, I had been engaged to a young man, and I broke the engagement, and I came here to recuperate.
And visit your friend.
Visit my college roommate, and I met my husband.
And was it love at first sight? Tell us about that.
No, I don't think it was love at first sight, but Claudia, who was my roommate, who was my college roommate, I said, oh, I think he likes you. I said, well, if he likes me, why doesn't he call me up? So after
Fellas have a way of doing that, don't they?
Well, he lived in Elizabeth, and of course, commuting was not
a little difficult
going
in
back
those days.
The roads even more. He had a car, but the roads were not that good.
Was he in business already?
Yes, he was already in business in Elizabeth. Uh-huh. So he finally did call me up, and we did have some dates. And I have to tell this story about Claudia's father. He was the autocrat of the breakfast table.
What was his name?
Isaac.
Isaac, sure.
And every morning, and he insisted that no matter what we were doing for the day, we all had to have breakfast together. And then Claudia used to take him to his office. And every morning at the breakfast table, he was a big tease. And every morning at the breakfast table, he'd say, well, did Mr. Black propose to you yet?
Mr. Black.
Schwartz.
And I used to say no, and then one morning when I said yes, I thought he would splatter all over the ceiling. What kind of people are my parents going to think they are? This man who only knows me 2 weeks is already proposing marriage, etc., etc., etc.
Proposed after 2 weeks.
About.
Well, he knew what he wanted.
Evidently.
Did you know what you wanted?
I was only half sure. I was very much on the rebound then. It was kind of dangerous.
Dangerous moment. When did you finally consent to marry with Alan Schwartz?
Well, he came to Chicago in May to meet my parents. And my father, who is a sheep in bear's clothing, said to him, and no money goes with my daughter.
Woo.
What you see as is.
What you see is what you get.
How long after were you married then?
I met him in April and we were married in October.
April of what year?
1926.
Met in April and married
in October.
In October. What date?
24. October
24. 25.
1926. And we went on a honeymoon through the East. We came back to Elizabeth on a Friday. And the Saturday night, the Ku Klux Klan burned a cross on the hill across from Elizabeth.
Oh, dear. Was that frightening? Mm-hmm. What was it like? How did it feel? I've never been exposed to that.
Well,
as a child, I
It's really, it's devastating.
Tell us.
It's devastating.
Must be.
Because I had lived in a large city always, and I'm certainly not foolish enough to say that those things don't exist, but in large cities, you don't brush elbows with them like you do in a small community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I found it a very devastating experience. In addition to which, I was only 22 years old, and it was really a devastating.